Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Hello and welcome as Owl Post is freshly delivered this week, and I am just one of your hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me as she is always, getting things by Owl's Post by left and right these days, because that's about all that's delivering, Drea Kaufman.
Hello!
How are you?
I'm here, alive, I'm doing okay. Everyone else
you're
in the house
not
is
dead.
Still alive. I don't know if last episode I shared that my daughter decided that this was the perfect time to start wanting to potty train. So my life could be better, but my life could be a lot worse too. So
I mean, I guess you're
I'll let
home.
You all decide.
You got some There's time, just gonna, but
yeah, just a whole lot of naked baby butt lately. So
classic. That's when you take the pictures for blackmail later on in their life.
Yep. Yep, sure is. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm so excited. Well,
I'm glad you are.
Yeah. Well, hey, good luck for you. You know, I don't have that. So, there's a lot less naked baby butt at our house. So.
I hope so.
Yeah. But we are going to be talking about chapter 25, The Seer Overheard. But before we get into that, make sure you're subscribed wherever you get your podcasts so you get the show as soon as it drops. If you're on Apple Podcasts, please do give us a star rating and review. You can find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. And we've got thenerdparty.com, where there is a contact section, and you can write Drea and I an email. We love getting emails. In fact, we just love interacting with anybody these days because, well, we're all social distancing at home. So, Harry is doing the opposite of social distancing in this chapter because, well, him and Jenny are together. And I think that is very funny because this chapter talks about how the fact that they're going out is like this big deal at school and everybody's talking about it. And I kind of love that for the first time in his life, Harry does not care that people are talking about him because, well, instead of it being some horrific dark magic thing that's happened to him, they're talking about something good and he loves it. So continue to talk, people.
I feel like it's not only that. I feel like it's a little bit of like, it's kind of the first time where like, he kind of knows people are talking about him, but he's not listening, right? Like,
yeah, he's kind of busy.
Yeah, it's not that. It's not like Ron where he cares what people think, but like he just never wanted the spotlight. And now he's so distracted by this thing that he's always wanted that he doesn't really care that people are talking about it. Like he's not listening. It's like white noise to him. But I do love, I think it's the very beginning of the chapter, Ginny's the one that points out, like, there have been several Dementor attacks and, something else pretty bad happened. And, you know, Romilda Vane is still focused on whether you have a dragon tattoo across your chest. It's like she's everyone's last perspective. But I think that is something that I think it's a coping mechanism for a lot of people. Right?
Yeah.
Like they look for something inconsequential to fixate on when things are big and scary. So, I mean, I know that that's what we do right now. I know it's hard to read the news in our current state with COVID and all of that and the social distancing and all the deaths and the uncertainty around it. Right. So in that sense, I get it. Right. I get why there's all this gossip and it makes it something that people can fixate on that's not scary and life threatening and all that stuff. But yeah, there is a bit of lost perspective here at the school. So much so that we're pretty sure even a lot of the teachers are involved in the salaciousness at this point. We go on to hear that Slughorn approves of Ginny and, Snape's continued torture of Harry seems to be getting longer because he sort of knows that Harry has somewhere he'd rather be. And so I find it interesting. It's kind of, you know, it's real strong kind of through the first, I don't know, what would you say, half the chapter is basically what we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing about whether or not Romilda Vale wanted to know if he had a hippogriff tattoo across his chest.
Right. It was a hippogriff,
and
yeah.
Yeah, that Ginny told her it was actually a Hungarian horntail because, you know, it's much more macho. And Harry's like, thanks. What did you tell her that Ron got? And she's like, a pygmy puff. But I didn't say where.
I want to imagine it's either in the tramp stamp area, which kids ask your parents. Parents, I'm sorry. Or on his little butt cheek.
Yes.
It could be behind his ear.
Oh, man.
I don't know. I'm just thinking of the most ridiculous places it would
yes.
be.
Yes. Oh, gosh. That was so funny. And I love that Ron's like, you know, just because I've given my permission doesn't mean I can withdraw it. And they have this whole argument about whether Ginny needs his permission to date her. And I just, again, the beginning of this chapter is really lighthearted. And it's really funny because what's fascinating about this chapter, it is really the tale of two halves of a chapter, because the second half of this chapter is not going to be so cheery. In fact, it's going to be kind of heart-wrenching. I found myself, honestly, by the end of the chapter, kind of like a little choked up because of what Harry finds out. It's disturbing and kind of like, I would say that it's some damning evidence against a character and who they are. So even though, yeah, we'll get there. Anyway, all of that.
You're getting ahead of yourself, kid.
Yeah. So what's fascinating is, you know, we also get Hermione not wanting to drop this whole thing about the prince. And she brings up this person that she found in an old copy of the Daily Prophet, which is Aline Prince, who is the captain of the Hogwarts Gobblestones team. And it was a woman. And it's just really weird because I'm not really sure exactly what the point that Hermione's trying to make here, other than maybe, I guess, it could possibly be a woman. But otherwise, like, what do we know about her? And, like, why would it, like, this was a part of the chapter I kind of wish I could ask J.K. Rowling about, because it doesn't make a ton of sense to me why this is in this chapter.
Yeah, I don't, my little sigh kind of sums it up. I think some of it, I think part of what is happening here is, I think they touch on it a little bit and Hermione kind of calls him out on something. I think she's feeling very insecure. She's always kind of been the smartest one, and now we've officially found this unknown person that she's not smarter than, right? And I think that's getting to her, and not wanting to know more about the person, like Harry not wanting to learn more about that person, one, doesn't allow her an opportunity to sort of rationalize what's happening to her. And as someone who's always the smartest one in the classroom, being able to like rationalize why this person might be smarter or how this person might be smarter or something like that is really hard for her. And I also think that there's a part of it that's kind of wearing on her from a feminist side. You know, she calls him out, like, the reason you won't accept the fact that this could be a lady is because you think a lady can't be clever. And, you know, Harry shuts her down and is like, if I didn't think that you were clever, like, I've been hanging out with you for, you know, 7 years or whatever, 5 years, and you are the cleverest person I have ever met. How could you possibly say that?
And I constantly call you smarter than I am.
Right. But I think there's a part of her that doesn't have strong female role models, doesn't have a lot of inspiration. It doesn't see a lot of pride around that. And so at this age, I think she's just starting to feel pressured. I mean, this is the age where people start to pressure you to get a boyfriend and talk about the future and what are you going to do from here? And, you know, I get this feeling that she's got this character that has sort of institutionalized pressure on her, that she's combating that along with puberty, along with this and that and that. And that. Like, there's all this stuff adding up. And I think that this, she sort of feels like, is the one thing she can control. And so she's freaking out and trying to control it. And the fact that her closest friends don't seem to want to support that because, you know, they have no idea what's going on in her mind. is, I think it's just this all coming together. And it's not really clear in how she presents this information and what she's given. But as a girl, as a woman who's been there, who's been 15 or 16, I guess they're 17 now. No, 16.
15.
They're on the eve of
their 16 because they'll be 17 next. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, as a 16-year-old girl, right, because she's just turned 16 because she took her apparitions test. As a 16-year-old girl, it's hard. It's hard when you feel like there's all this stuff in your head and you're feeling all these pressures and that men can't understand it. And so I think she's starting to feel a little bit of that. And I think she's Rawling's trying to get a little bit of that man versus woman difference in here. And it just, Hermione wants to know more and she's frustrated that they don't. So she's going out there and trying to solve this puzzle herself. And when we're talking about, we talked a little bit about how it's scary and dark and people went to gossip for that. It's kind of the same. It's scary and dark and she can't control that. But what she can control is solving this other puzzle that is pretty inconsequential that she thinks has all this risk associated with it. And so she's going to come to them hoping to get support to continue her theory. So she's just grasping at straws. And I got to say, though, I commend her. I commend her here for being clever, because I think she waited till Harry was at his very happiest to ask, hoping that that would sway him. Hey, you're in a great mood. I'm going to ask you for something. I want to ask you to look at something because you're in a great mood. And Ginny wasn't around to have his back either. So, I mean, she was very strategic in her timing of this discussion, but it does feel out of place in retrospect to everything else. But I think it's more about Hermione's character than it really is about Harry's, which is a total weird like sidetrack we take in this chapter, which is very, very much so Harry's chapter.
Yeah, I mean, it's strange to me because this whole thing with this, you know, Harry has much more evidence that Malfoy's up to no good. And neither of them are doing a good job of believing him on that, which I think is fascinating. Whereas like here, it's like, you know, everything she's bringing up about whether or not the prince is dangerous and everything and all that kind of stuff. Like so far, really, there's nothing that's been dangerous other than one random spell that they wrote down in the margins of their book that barely has a note by it. So other than saying for enemies. So it's, and, you know, even as Hermione leaves, Ron and him are talking about that. And he's like, you don't think it's crazy that I want the book back? And he's like, dude, are you kidding? It made you a genius, like, in potions. And, you know, I mean, that spell, not great. But, I mean, you know, Malfoy's okay. You know, he was able to be healed right away. You know, he's back up and around. So it's not like he killed anybody. And so it's just it's a strange thing because, you know, later on in this chapter when Harry's going to go to them and give them some information, like he has to be yelling at them to just shut the heck up and listen to him because he doesn't have time for them to interrupt, but he knows something's going to happen. And again, he has much more evidence going into this. And so I just think it's really fascinating to me because that's the only part of this that kind of feels like it connects is that Hermione's trying to figure out something that may or may not be important at all. And Harry's been trying to do the same thing all book, but what Harry's coming up with is much more influential as with the evidence he's producing than anything that Hermione's coming up with. So it's just that's the only connection that I could make throughout the chapter.
That makes sense. I do think there's a bit of a difference here. I think what actually we're looking at here is, I think we're looking at being 16, right? We're looking at this world is about, their world right now is about them.
Yeah.
It's about what they think is important. It's about their theories. It's about them because they're 16 years old, right? And they're just starting to learn how the world is much bigger than themselves. And I think, you know, they have been at this point where they've had the advantage to see that more, but they're still only teenagers, right? They're still having to learn how to think about someone besides the capital I. So I think that's part of it too, is that they each are focused on their own individual things and frustrated that their friends aren't as vested in it as they are. And I think that's a trait that we all have and can relate to or have been through, and it's hard, right? So I think it's also a way of making this real for us, right? It's a way of showing the human side of it and things like that. But yeah, it's interesting because as they're going through this, we find out that he has a meeting with Dumbledore that evening, I believe.
He gets a note saying he's got a meeting with Dumbledore tonight.
Yeah, and so they get kind of all worked up and excited, and they're like, what does this mean? And it's sort of like this anxious excitement, right? And they want to figure it out. It's interesting that sort of snaps them back a little bit, though, out of that sort of selfish perspective and forces them to realize, like, oh, yeah, there's a bigger picture. Hold on. Here we go. But I did really, you called it out, I did really appreciate the moment that Ron and Harry have, because I think we've talked about they're really strong as a trio. But I do think that each of the relationships between the pairs are unique. And it's nice to be reminded of that sort of similarity and the camaraderie between Ron and Harry, because it's been so rocky over the last couple of books. Yeah. Between Lavender and Hermione and all of this stuff. Like, it's nice to see them kind of back in that close friendship again. It was warm and reassuring, you know, even after he kissed his sister. Yeah.
Well, what's fascinating is that as Harry is making his way to Dumbledore's office, he's going past where the Room of Requirement is, and Professor Trelawney is there, and she tells Harry that she's basically been kicked out of the Room of Requirement. And that there was somebody else in there while she was there trying to hide, and it's very apparent that she's trying to hide all the sherry bottles that she has. And so she was kicked out of the room because she heard somebody else in there who was very excited and like whooping and like saying yes, that they had done it. And Harry's like, who was in there? Who was in there? And he's like, was it Malfoy? And she's like, I don't know. You know, I didn't see them. Was it a boy? And she's like, I don't know, but maybe. And he's like, I love this. When he's like, you couldn't have found out who it was without asking? And she's like, oh, the inner eye was on other matters. And I was like, and Harry's just like,
AKA she's drunk, yeah. Kids. Just start this section with her hiccuping,
yes,
after getting,
yes,
kicked out of the room. So sorry to rain on everyone's parade here, but yeah, she's had a little bit of her, mm-hmm, of her sherry,
yeah,
this evening, and is her inner eye is a little.
Oh, she's little flying high right now. So,
well, and when Harry calls that out, she instantly gets defensive too about friends. Right? She, mm-hmm, like snaps back and starts focusing on that again,
and then. As they're talking, Harry's like, I think that you should tell Dumbledore. And she's like, the headmaster doesn't really want to talk to me anymore. And then she starts kind of like pulls out this tarot card, and she's like, the lightning struck tower, calamity and disaster, they're near. And Harry's like, I really think you should tell Dumbledore. In fact, I'm on my way to Dumbledore's office right now. We could go together. And she says, okay. And they head to his office, and she starts recounting the time that she met Dumbledore in the first place, her first meeting with Dumbledore. And this is...
And so before you get to that, okay, because we take a very sad turn here in a minute, I gotta say, I was over the... I just giggled the whole time Harry was talking to Trelawney, because it's so... He so was treating her like a kid because of the state that she, yeah, was in. He was like, oh, let's do this. Nope, over here. You know, like, I can just see him like walking with her and like keeping her on track. And like, nope, here. Like you have to treat someone who's inebriated. And I just thought it was so funny that he just naturally did that and was instantly like, huh, I can totally use this to my advantage. All right, let's do that. And I thought that was really clever, and I did find it, like, I kind of giggled as he, like, knew exactly how to make that happen. So I thought that was pretty clever. And then I instantly stopped giggling when she shared the night that she first met Dumbledore.
Well, and I mean, the big revelation is that as she's at her meeting at the Hogshead with Dumbledore, and she doesn't remember really giving the prophecy, but Harry knows, he's filling in the gaps, that's what's happening. And she says that they are interrupted by Snape. And Harry's like, wait. You were interrupted by Severus Snape. And he is furious now because he realizes that what this means is that it was Severus Snape that ran to Voldemort to sell out his parents, and that he is the one responsible for his parents having died, not just Peter Pettigrew.
Right, especially because at this point, we still don't know that Trelawney understands what happened fully that night, right? Like, she did something. She shared the prophecy that night that she met Dumbledore, and I still don't think she knows that, right? And so for her to sort of casually tell him this without the context, he puts it together, but she has no idea, right? It's such an innocent thing that she's sharing in her inebriated state that turns out to be just the worst thing, the last thing Harry wanted to hear. And it's sort of, I feel like he is reset back. The trust he's been building with Dumbledore is sort of reset now because he knows that Dumbledore knows and didn't tell him. It's like that moment where the lie by omission is very clear and Harry is just done putting up with it.
It's fascinating because he gets into Dumbledore's office. He doesn't start yelling immediately. You know, Dumbledore says, oh, good, you're here. You know, do you still want to go with me? And he's like, yes. And, Harry's like, so you think you found a Horcrux? And Dumbledore says, yes. And he's like, it's okay to be afraid. And he's like, I'm not afraid. You know, he's trying to hold it together. Here, and he kind of asks, do you know which Horcrux it is? Do you know where it is? And Dumbledore says that he thinks that it's, you know, where Tom Riddle had terrorized the two children from the orphanage on their trip. And so Harry remembers that story. And Harry says that he's going to come, and Dumbledore senses that there's something going on, and he says, what happened to you? And Harry's like, nothing. And he's like, what has you upset? And Harry's like, I'm not upset. And he's like, Harry, you were never good at occlumency. And that's the moment where Harry loses it and just starts yelling at him about how you knew it was Snape. You knew it was Snape the whole time. Trelawney just told me. And what's fascinating here is that Dumbledore doesn't say anything during all the yelling. And his expression doesn't change, but his face completely whitens. And you can tell that this is having a massive impact on Dumbledore. And I think it's fascinating to watch Dumbledore try to explain to Harry. And without spoiling anything, he doesn't tell the whole story that he actually knows. And what's fascinating is that this is a rift between Dumbledore and Harry it's going to actually continue into the next book, even though there's going to be some very impactful things that happen to both of them through the end of this book. This is still going to have a massive repercussion on Harry's trust of Dumbledore. Like this is another moment where I think Dumbledore's face whitens because I think he's miscalculated again the power of not telling Harry the whole truth, and he realizes that he just cost himself.
Yeah, I think this is another case where, you know, we have seen Dumbledore do this over and over again where he has these omissions. He doesn't ever straight up lie to Harry, but he also is never super forthcoming. And I feel like a couple chapters ago, we all felt like we were on the same page and that everyone was going to be very open and honest. And Harry was feeling very kind of in the loop about things. And now this is just another instance where he's shown that that's absolutely not the case. And when confronted with the information, Dumbledore also does not continue to disclose, right? Doesn't feel the need to explain himself. And it comes off it, from one perspective, is kind of arrogant, right? He doesn't want to explain himself. He doesn't need to explain himself. Harry just needs to sort of trust him. And, you know, it may be very well intentioned, but from Harry's perspective and sort of the reader's perspective, you feel like you're very let down. You don't feel like you can trust him. You don't feel like you're in the loop. Right. You don't feel like you have all the information you need, right, to go from there. So I thought it was very interesting that that's where we found ourselves. And I had hoped, I think we all had hoped from this point, that he would have learned, right? Every time he's withheld this information from Harry, it's only bitten him in the butt. So, you know, you sort of hope he would have learned, but apparently did not. So, well, and
I think it's interesting because, you know, Dumbledore says that, you know, this is something that Snape regretted the rest of his life. You know, because he only heard half of the prophecy, he had no idea that, you know, who Voldemort would attack at this point. He had no idea that would have been his parents, and that if he had known that, he would have probably never told Voldemort. And Harry's like, he's a really good Occlumens, though, right? You know, he's really good. So how do you know he's telling the truth? Which is a great question. I mean, I think this is one of the things that, you know, as we're coming down to this Snape question that's throughout all of the books, there's a lot of evidence against Snape. And Dumbledore, you know, says, didn't speak for a moment, but he says, I am sure and I trust Snape completely. And he's like, I'm not going to talk about this anymore, basically. And then Harry moves to the next subject, which is the fact that what Professor Trelawney just experienced in the Room of Requirement, and that Malfoy is up to something, and so is Snape. And he's like, and you're leaving tonight. And that's when they're going to act. And this is where Dumbledore's like, had enough.
It's interesting because I feel like knowing more at this point is hard because you can kind of see both sides of the story. But trying to forget all of that, it is very hard to read this part and not be super frustrated with Dumbledore. And not feel like he's being a little patronizing, right? Like, that I'm not able to handle what he knows as a reader. And to know that it had this impact, it still is just very frustrating. And so I get it. And I sort of feel like from there, when he sort of starts focusing him back on the Horcrux and things like that, he's sort of manipulating Harry. He's sort of using it as leverage. Drop it or I won't take you with me. It's almost like a parent. Again, that sort of condescending, patronizing relationship. And I mean, he's right. And we know as we get through these books and we get near the end of the chapter, and anyone who's seen the movies understands a little bit more, and we can talk about it then, that will make this a little more fulfilling. But in the meantime, you're just sort of left with this giant turd of a half chapter that just makes you irritated and angry and like, rawr. There's not a word for that.
Yeah, no, I mean, right there with you. I think, you know, Dumbledore clearly answers the question about, and I think he answers this one well. Look, I would never leave my school in a place where I thought it wasn't going to be well protected. In fact, by me leaving tonight, there will actually be more protection because I've arranged for it. And he even calls Harry out. Do you think that I would not take the safety of my students seriously? And this does sober up Harry in a way for him to be able to say, "I," because he realizes the care that Dumbledore has for the school and for all of the students. And so he kind of is able to shut up Harry. And I don't think it's arrogance. I think the struggle that I'm seeing here in Dumbledore is that, like, he has miscalculated again when it comes to Snape and Harry and what that means and what this truth means to Harry. And I think he's also, I think that's wearing on him as a character. I think it's wearing on Dumbledore a little bit.
I agree that the relationship between Dumbledore, between Snape and Harry is wearing on him. It's old. He's frustrated. He's over it. But the part to me that I feel like is a true character flaw and is maybe where the arrogance goes is this isn't the first time that Dumbledore has had to make a decision about what to share or disclose in the situation, right? This isn't his first miscalculation, and he keeps doing it again, and he's keep presented with these opportunities to make a different choice, and he keeps making the same choice in a different way. And that to me is kind of where I feel the arrogance coming from, is that he feels so right in his need to withhold a very key piece of information we'll get at like the very, very end of the series. He feels so right to hold that back from Harry that all his other decisions are kind of based on that. And that to me is where that arrogance lies, right? Is that he has many miscalculations. He's had many opportunities to do this differently and he chooses not to. So I think, and that's just one of those things I think can be interpreted differently just based on your experience and your perspective on it. And so for me, what is arrogant, and I run into this with my husband all the time, like, hey, I think you're being arrogant. And he's like, no, I just know the right thing. Like, that's arrogant, right? I think it just comes from different sensitivity to it. So for me, I read it as like a little bit of annoyance paired with some arrogance, right? That he should just be trusted. But I can totally see how maybe that doesn't lead through for others.
Mm-hmm. So on the Snape and Harry thing, I don't think it's arrogance because of what we'll find out later. And I can't talk about that just yet because that's the way we do our show. But I think there's another way he could have handled this. And specifically, I think what he could have done in earning more of Harry's trust is, I don't understand why he won't tell him what is going on with Malfoy that he knows. Like, why wouldn't he trust Harry with this at this point? You know,
I'll be able to answer that for you in like two chapters.
Because
I'll be able to give you my perspective on that in like two or three chapters.
He doesn't have to tell Harry everything on that either, but he could tell him more than he's telling him now. And I think it would have made this a much easier. I just think this would make it much easier for Harry. So.
Yes, I agree. But I have more thoughts on that.
Yeah.
So let's come
we will
back
get to it
that.
Then.
I wish everyone could see sometimes our recordings because
yeah,
I'm like
really
super
funny.
Animated right now. I'm like, I know, I have thoughts, but I'm two or three chapters ahead.
I do think this is really fascinating, though, because there's a moment like this, and I'm wondering if Rowling is doing this on purpose, there's that moment in The Lord of the Rings where Gandalf kind of raises up to his full height and kind of intimidates Bilbo. And she mentions that here, that Dumbledore pulls himself up to his full height. And
I think it's a direct.
Yeah.
I think it's a direct.
So,
yeah, I think it is too.
Because he says, I'm going to take you with me on one condition, that you will obey every single command I give to you without question. And Harry's like, of course. He's like, I want you to understand this. If I say run, hide, go back, do I have your word that you'll do what I say? And they keep going through this. If I tell you to hide, yes. If I tell you to flee, if I tell you to leave without me to save yourself. And every time Harry says yes. And so he's like, okay, I want you to get your invisibility cloak and I want you to meet me down at the main entrance in 5 minutes. And so he runs to the common room. He runs upstairs. He gets his invisibility cloak. But then he gets the map of the Marauder's map and a sock that has a Felix Felicis in it. And he hands it to Hermione and Ron. He's like, I don't have time to explain. All I know, he tells him as quickly as possible what happened and where he's going, what he saw in the room of the requirement with Trelawney, and he gives him the map, and he gives him the Felix Felicis, and he says, I want you to watch out for what's happening, and I want you guys to take this along with Ginny, because you're going to need all the luck you can get tonight. And this is the moment that just really got to me, when she's like, no, you take this. You need all the luck you can get. And he's like, I'm with Dumbledore. I'll be fine. And he's like, but I want you guys to be okay. And that just, like, it still gets to me now. Like, just Harry... like, he just had a massive fight with Dumbledore, right? But he also, more than anything, it's these people who have to be safe. Like, he can't live without these people. And it just, like, it breaks your heart, because, like, that's Harry's family. Like, he needs them to be okay. And there's such a beauty and a pureness to that love. Again, what are we seeing here? We're seeing Harry's sacrificial love of sacrificing something that could basically make most likely everything go swimmingly for Harry, but he realizes his friends are in danger, and he gives up what will be their best chance for success to them. And I think it's awesome.
Yeah, and it, again, goes back to that thing that sets Harry apart, right? And when you talk about love being the stronger thing, this, you know, love being the strongest weapon, like we talked about a couple chapters ago, and he couldn't understand that. I always appreciate in her stories that she shows you how strong that is. She doesn't just tell you. She doesn't like tell you that and be like, hey, by the way, guys, see, love's weapon. Ha ha. Like, she just shows you from his like unconditional love and how strong and hard he loves, how powerful that can be and how much stronger it makes others. And I think that that's just another example of that happening. And I love that he throws Ginny in there this time, too. He specifically calls her out, like, split it between the three of you. Like, you three have to make, like, you three have to survive the night. Like, he doesn't even know anything for sure. He has no idea what's going on. But all he knows is that those three have to be safe. And, you know, it's moving. And the fact that it also speaks to Harry as a leader, right? Which we talked about, you know, Harry's not dumb, right? He knows to trust that Dumbledore's leaving it protected. But it's also speaking to the fact that, like, this is a group of highly trained, skilled wizards, whether they're teenagers or adults. They're very skilled at this point. And they are underutilized, in their opinion, in this situation. And so they're going to take it upon themselves to call back Dumbledore's army together using the tokens and add an extra level of defense, because, hey, it can't hurt anything, right? Why not be on the defensive? Why not do the right thing? Why not be on alert when this happens? And the fact that he knows to do that just speaks to his leadership skills that, again, a couple books ago, he was questioning why anyone would follow him. And that's the answer, right? So it is such a short but touching sort of section that just makes you, it makes you warm and fuzzy and a little bit afraid of what's coming. But, it makes you just sort of love Harry more.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. And this is also a moment too, you know, as they go outside, they travel to Hogsmeade, and they travel past Three Broomsticks, where they see Madame Rose Murda, and they make their way to the Hogshead, and they don't even really have to go in. People just had to see them kind of look to arrive there. And then Harry and Dumbledore apparate away, and they apparate. When they arrive, they have a, you know, and she says, lungs full of fresh, salty air. And so they have arrived at their destination. And we have to leave it there, because next week is The Cave, chapter 26. And yeah, I would say this is the point in the book where everything's been building up to these last, I think, I would say The Cave, The Lightning Struck Tower, and The Flight of the Prince are the three chapters where everything is really, it's been building to these three things, these three chapters happening. So I can't wait to get there with everyone, because it's such good stuff. And then I can't wait that we're going to be starting the Deathly Hallows, which I'm so excited to be getting to. So I love that book so much. But Drea, if anybody wants to catch up with you, and talk about all of these things that maybe we can't talk about on the show just yet because of the format of our show, where can they find you?
Sure, you can find me on Twitter at PCFJick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And I am on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Vero under the name MattRushing02. I'm here on the network doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills, where we're talking about Star Wars each and every week. We just pick a fun topic or something going on in Star Wars or whatnot. It's a blast. So check it out. You can find me over on the Trek FM network doing two shows. One is called The Orb with Chris Jones, where we talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. You can also find me doing the 602 Club, which is the General Geek Show, where we are talking about all of the various fandoms that we love. And then last but not least, doing Cinema Stories with my friend Courtney, where we are talking about films, but through the lens of faith. So thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.